Well, it's a pleasure for me to introduce Ingvar Tietze, University of Iowa Foundation Distinguished Professor and Director of the National Center for Voice and Speech. You have had an opportunity to read about his significant accomplishments involving the application of physics, physiology, anatomy, and vocal art to a better understanding of the human voice. I wish to touch on less well-known aspects of his career. Dr. Tietze came to BYU with the goal of applying physical principles to a better understanding of the voice production mechanism of the vocal folds. Upon hearing this exciting but ambitious goal, I responded that my expertise in the field was limited, but that I would always be available for discussion. Undaunted by this apparent lack of support, he pursued this research for several years, gaining new insights and educating his mentor in the process. His PhD dissertation, A Milestone in Vocal Fold Modeling, was published in full in the journal Phonetica. Upon graduation, Dr. Tietze had a young family to support, but was faced with very limited employment opportunities. His wife, Kathy, was a special source of support during the years of moving from one temporary position to another. During these challenging times, he managed to keep his goal in focus. His commitment was rewarded when appointed to the faculty at the University of Iowa with its strong voice science program, where he could pursue his goal more fully. In addition to his role as a voice scientist, Professor Tietze continues to perform vocally. He is generous in sharing his knowledge and insights with vocal artists as well as other voice scientists. I look forward with each of you to Professor Tietze's presentation of Discover Your Voice.
Thank you. I wish to thank Professor William J. Strong of the Department of Physics and Astronomy and the Forum Speakers Selection Committee and President Bateman for this invitation to present a lecture on the human voice to you, the students and faculty at Brigham Young. You know, every lecture delivered here is uttered by a voice, the primary medium of expression in our society. Have you ever wondered how a speaker's voice affects the message he or she presents? Homer wrote, "He ceased, but left so charming on their ear his voice that listening, still they seem to hear." My lecture today is in three parts. First, I want to explore with you a little of the science of human sound production. Second, I want to make you aware of the power and influence that you can have with your own voice. Thirdly, I want to present to you some of the results of my pet project, a voice simulator, which will hopefully benefit those who are engaged in training and habilitating voices. Let's begin with the physiology of voice production. How is the brain involved in making sounds? The picture you see shows the larynx at the bottom, connected downward to the windpipe and ultimately to the lungs. Our intent to vocalize is formulated in the cerebral cortex. The speech motor area is then activated, and all commands to the larynx go through the nucleus ambiguus, right above the brainstem in the skull section of the diagram. But we must immediately distinguish between vocalization and speech. Speech usually includes vocalization, but vocalization can exist entirely out of the context of speech. Animals vocalize, infants vocalize, speech impaired or speech deprived persons vocalize. It is currently believed that the larynx, which is the major sound producing organ in the human and in animals, is driven by two systems of neural pathways, the speech motor system and the limbic system. The limbic system, activated by emotions and the environment, internal and external to the body, has a strong grip on the larynx and the lungs. Sometimes called the fight or flight system, the limbic system of neural pathways produces motor patterns for cries, grunts, shouts, squeals, moans, and laughter. Thus, we vocalize to locate, to be located, to express anger, fear, joy, and disgust, as do many animals. All of this can be done in or out of the context of speech. The effect of the limbic system on the larynx is powerful. As a child, I had to walk past a building with a siren on top of it on my way to and from school. This was back in Germany. I didn't carry a watch, but I knew approximately when that siren would go off. I tried never to be at the side of the building because the sound was so intense and frightening that it caused me to run and shout in an uncontrolled way for several blocks until I finally calmed down. I had very little control over my flight responses. The speech motor system, the top middle in your slide, also activates the larynx, but it engages it together with the tongue, the lips, and other speech articulators. It could be hypothesized that the speech motor system is free of emotion and unaffected by the environment, coding only speech gestures into strings of sound. In a newscast or reading instructions out loud, the system is perhaps used that way, a straight line from the cortical language and speech centers to vocal output. The main task of the brain is then to coordinate the timing of all these movements. But how detachable is the speech from the emotions? Some scientists believe that the speech motor system always engages the limbic system, making, in fact, optimal use of the neural wiring that already exists for primal sounds. If this is true, emotions and rhythm cycles for breathing and laughter could enhance vocal communication. They would become the building blocks for speech. Others believe that the speech motor system is specially wired. Infant cries change to coos, which change to babbles, which change to vowels, and finally to consonants, and ultimately words. Articulatory movement and development, they would say, is part of the human genetic code, independent of the limbic system and unique to humans. If this is true, emotions may in fact compete with speech for the use of the larynx and the lungs. When you bear spiritual or emotional testimony and you, quote, choke up, your pitch sometimes rises in a very uncontrolled fashion. A sob can block your respiration and phonation, and tears and extra mucus can cause you to misarticulate. That's poor speech, but it's extraordinary vocal communication. Some listeners are enraptured by it, and others a little bit embarrassed by it. Emotions talk to emotions. Does the spirit communicate through the limbic system? An interesting question. Another part of the nervous system that is deeply involved in vocalization is the spinal reflex system. This is on the right side of your slide. Breathing is autonomic. It requires no conscious voluntary action because the amount of air and carbon dioxide exchanged in the lungs must be regulated. There is an inherent feedback control between the lungs, the larynx, and the spinal cord. Let's get a view of the larynx with a fibroscope. We insert the scope into the mouth and travel over the tongue like Gulliver's Travels if you are one of the little people. The larynx acts as a valve, opening and closing the gate for more or less air to be exchanged. When we vocalize, the breathing rhythm is altered, and the reflex system may get in the way. Coughing is an example of a respiratory reflex. Now let's see how we accomplish a pitch glide.
Thank you.
here's a puzzle for you. The slightest touch on the vocal folds with a foreign object will elicit a cough reflex, such as a breadcrumb or a Q-tip or anything on the vocal folds. But why don't we cough when the vocal folds touch each other in collision, as they do many times, thousands of times a minute? One theory is that the speech motor system must inhibit the reflex system, as you see in the dashed line on the figure. If this is true, then some voice disorders may result from a malfunction of this inhibition of the reflexes. The reflex system may be triggered too easily, and the speech motor system gets tripped up by it. This may be the case in a symptom known as spasmodic dysphonia, where a person speaks with many interruptions and much tension. The main take-home message here is that the larynx is multifunctional and hardwired to several major parts of the nervous system. Anatomically, it sits in the middle of the neck, surrounded by all of the lifelines of the body. It's a busy highway there. The jugular vein and the carotid artery pass alongside the larynx, as does the vagus nerve. Food passes directly behind the larynx, and air is drawn through it. Is it any wonder that our voice is a mirror of most of our body functions? Cyrus said, "As the man, so is his speech." Voice reflects our age, our gender, disease, fatigue, and physical fitness. Vocal tremors are like earth tremors, revealing much of what lies under the surface. Shakespeare wrote, "His voice was propertied as all the tuned spheres," recognizing perhaps that if all the neural, aerodynamic, and acoustic systems are functioning synergistically or in good harmony, like pulsating oscillators, human expression with our voice can be glorious. Let me now move on to the second part of my talk, what you can do with your voice to be more powerful, influential, and effective. Your voice can be a dagger or a comforter, a well of confidence or a spring of doubt. The tones of human voices can be mightier than strings or brass to move the soul, wrote the German playwright and poet Klopstock. All of this is demonstrated in our interactions with children. Too often we move from lullabies and sweet baby talk to sharp warnings and chastisement to belittlement and degradation. It's not so much the words, although they can hurt, but it's the tone of the voice. "Oh, how cute," changes to, "Billy, that's nice," and finally to, "Don't do that." My dog, Ginger, understands few of the words I utter, but all of the intonation patterns in my voice. The tail goes up and down and from side to side with every pitch, loudness, and voice quality change. You see, her limbic system responds directly to my limbic system. Nothing is more sacred to people than the sound of their own name. Youth, especially, and teenagers love sweet, nourishing voices. Do you remember how your mother or father called you to pick up the phone, to come to the dinner table, or to do a job around the house? "If only she wouldn't say my name like that," you thought, "I would gladly have done the job." And your girlfriend, on the other hand, really knew how to ring your bell with the way she said your name. My last name, which is German, is pronounced Titze or Tietze if the I is followed by an E in the spelling, which in some of my ancestry it is. But this name cannot easily be pronounced by most Americans. Two short, unstressed vowels in succession are not part of the usual English phonology. I went through years of torture in junior high and high school having my name mispronounced, often in a rather embarrassing way. It was pronounced like the protrusions on the milk-producing anatomy of a cow. On the first day of class, in every new term, roll was called, and I sweat through the alphabet from A to T, until the teacher would butcher my name, often getting a big kick out of it. What else was there to do on the first day of class that was funny? The worst of all of these embarrassments, however, took place on my graduation day at the University of Utah. I was receiving an MS degree in electrical engineering, and we were congregated in a large hall packed with parents and siblings of the graduates, and the associate dean was reading names. Now, mind you, this is the only chance an associate dean ever gets to show the personality that they have. He was absolutely convinced that he could pronounce all the correct French, German, and Latin American pronunciations of the names. Sweat was pouring down my forehead as I was in line to walk up the stage to get my diploma, and he got to Sue Thompson. I was always after a Thompson or a Thomas. And then it came. He paused, smiled, and seized his opportunity to be funny. "Ingo Roland Titsy," chuckles started in the audience, especially among the younger siblings of the graduates, whose boredom was alleviated only by funny names and funny-looking people. Things got worse. I had a very long thesis title. Here it is: Design of a Solid-State UHF Single-Port Varactor Diode Parametric Amplifier. The associate dean chuckled, and the audience laughed out loud as I began to walk across the stage, and this title was read. In a matter of seconds, I had become the nerd of all nerds. But it got worse yet. Believing that I would trip and drop my diploma, I concentrated on damage containment and not on where Sue Thompson was going ahead of me. She went in front of the curtain on the other side of the stage and down into to the audience. I went behind the curtain and found myself alone with the light switches and curtain ropes and no way out. There was more audience laughter. But now came the real tough decision. Do you come out quickly or do you wait a while? I decided to wait a while. After some 24 graduates had walked by, I thought I could just sneak into the line and not be noticed. Wrong. The audience knew where I had gone and was waiting. That was the final roar of laughter. Well, the moral of this story is that we should teach people to pronounce our names. More importantly, we should honor the names of others. We should honor how they would like to have their names spoken and how they would like to be addressed and summoned. In a world in which insults and vocal intimidation are now practiced almost as a social skill, a warm, soothing voice can set you apart from others. Your social and communicative skills should go beyond that of a cow's moo. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 11, we read, "A soothing tongue is a tree of life." And I echo the words of Lord Byron when he said, "The devil hath not, in all his quiver's choice, an arrow for the heart like a sweet voice." We can sweeten our voices by changing our pitch, by pausing longer, by waiting for replies, by asking friends if there's any raspiness or nasality or other annoyance in our voice, mostly by caressing more with our words. We do it so well when we read bedtime stories to our children. "Once upon a time, there were three little bears, a big papa bear, and a middle-sized mama bear, and a wee little baby bear." This type of vocal caressing be more expressive with pitch, loudness, and voice quality is also healthy for your larynx. Vocal fatigue often comes from monotone speaking. The muscles of the larynx like to be exercised in a variety of ways. Think of it, we dress up our bodies every day with different clothing, creating a variety of visual images of ourselves. How about working on your vocal image a little bit? It really pays to sound cheerful, confident, and healthy. Save your voice by being expressive and not repressive. Let's watch three public service announcements created by the National Center for Voice and Speech for the general public.
Talk is cheap. Your voice isn't. If you have a nagging hoarse voice or a recurring frog in the throat, call your doctor or the National Center for Voice and Speech and take care of your voice before it goes to the dogs.
Your voice is unique and needs special care.
Speaking loudly, hey lady, can hurt your voice, so give it a rest.
Clearing the throat or coughing can damage your voice, so try a sip of water.
Oops. Stress makes you force your voice, can cause tissue damage, so relax.
I'll take care of your voice.
Got a voice problem? Call your doctor or the National Center for Voice and Speech.
Thank you very much.
I can do anything with my voice, with my voice, with my voice, 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 voice.
The last public service announcements emphasize the value of chant. This type of vocalization can have healing powers for yourself and others. The self-generated vibrations in our body break down tensions, if not tumors and constricted nerves and arteries. Although I'm not aware of any proof of this, it has been claimed that those who vocalize their emotions by laughter, by sighing, by weeping, by moaning, are less apt to develop cancer. Does rattling the cells in your body preserve them? Probably not. But deep breathing, good posture, and release of muscular tension, which is part of voice therapy, do wonders to tune your body. The first two service announcements emphasize the protection of your voice. If you plan to be a counselor, a telephone marketer, a teacher, a public speaker, a courtroom lawyer, or any other professional whose primary tool of trade is the voice, you need to learn about voice preservation. The great singer Lauritz Melchior said, "Voice is as capital in the bank. Sing on your interest, and your voice will last." The many of you here who are teachers, and you who will be teachers, remember that a strong point in class can be made with silence or a very low, soft voice. More effectively than getting louder and louder and louder as you try to make your point. You who are parents remember the same thing. If you don't want to sound like a broken record, don't. Speak not when you're expected to speak, and speak soft and sweet when you're expected to be angry and loud. Use the element of surprise in your voice. Most of all, think all that you speak, but speak not all that you think. Idle talk is noise pollution. A Russian observer to the House of Representatives, Boris Marshalov, said, "Congress is so strange. A man gets up to speak and says nothing. Nobody listens, and then everybody disagrees." The recent trend on television talk shows is for everybody to talk at once, turn-taking is no longer in vogue. Producers probably think that it's more dynamic and natural for everybody to talk at once. But to me, it's an admission that little of what anybody says is profound. Let me now move on to the last portion of my talk, the development of a voice simulator. As all technology, it can be used for the good and for the bad. Certainly, more chatter, especially by machines, is not a blessing to our society. But a device that can help us be more effective in our own voice communication is a welcome tool. Recent developments in voice and speech simulation have made heavy use of magnetic resonance and electron beam imaging of the vocal anatomy. Shown here is a scan of the skin on top, the bone structure in the middle, and the airway on the bottom. The airway is what interests us the most in research. We can now get full volumetric scans of the entire airway from the sinuses to the lungs. Shown in the next picture is a cross-section through the airway, or the vocal tract, as it's called, for an E vowel, as in the word heed. On the left, note the narrow airway on top in the mouth and the wider airway in the throat, the vertical part. On the right side, the picture is rotated toward a view from the front. In our research, we have focused on the lower vocal tract above the vocal folds and the glottis, which is the airway between the two vocal folds, to identify acoustic resonators that define voice qualities, such as twang, where the lower pharynx is narrow, or sob, where the lower pharynx is wide. In very broad terms, what is being said is formulated by the lips, the tongue, and the jaw. But who says it and how it's being said is more determined by the lower tract and the larynx. Our simulations proceed as follows. We begin by stretching out the person and chopping the airway into many cylindrical sections. Then we impose a lung pressure or an airflow from the left. Estimates of this pressure and airflow come from many measurements on adults, males, females, and children. The airflow excites acoustic pressures in the vocal tract as seen, and these are seen as yellow-green pulses starting from the left. In the next video. In each section, acoustic waves travel in both directions because of reflections or echoes that occur whenever the geometry changes. Whenever you see a blue pulse, then the pressure goes negative, and whenever it's green or yellow, it's positive. At the mouth, the acoustic pressure is mathematically radiated into free space. This then becomes the digital sound that we hear. All of these calculations are done at a sampling rate of 44,100 hertz. All in all, well over a million calculations every second for pressures and airflows and tissue movement. It is important to mention that the sound does not originate from human sound. We do not take recordings and alter them. We do at times get the rhythm, the melody, and the timing from natural speech, but the laws of physics really dictate the ultimate quality of the sound that we hear. Now, you have heard simulated speech. Cars, elevators, teller machines, even appliances now talk to you. I just can't wait until we get a toaster that says, you know, the slice of bread is ready. But you haven't heard much simulation of singing. One of my colleagues in Denver, Sam Lancaster, wrote a play written for animals and a singing robot. And one of the lines is, talking is walking, singing is flying. For us, learning all about singing is as exciting as learning how to fly. Singing involves risk. High notes are like triple jumps on an ice skating rink. If you make them, you draw thunder's applause. If you miss them, you are humiliated. God giveth speech to all, song to few, wrote Walter C. Smith. Singing is not only the ultimate emotional outlet, it is an obvious exposure of one's inner self. Many of you have followed the spectacular performances by the three tenors of our time. As a main feature of my presentation to you today, permit me to do a little spoof on the performances of the three tenors.
The three famous tenors, Luciano Pavarotti, Placido Domingo, and José Carreras, have gained popularity as a trio. In concert, they work together like a machine. What if one of them were a machine? How would they interact with each other? Let's see how this idea would be conceived. We need an engineer and a tailor, and we need computers. To the tune of Stephen Sondheim's song, Putting It Together, from Sunday in the Park with George, we assemble the robot. Doubt and frustration creep in as the difficulty of the job is realized. Can this machine ever become concert worthy?
Be nice, George. We have to pay a price, George. Don't think about it twice, George. They like to give advice, George. It's time to get to work. Art isn't easy, even when you're hot. Advancing art is easy, financing it is not. A vision's just a vision if it's only in your head. If no one gets to hear it, it's as good as dead. It has to come to life.
You bet, I bet.
Putting it together,
piece by piece.
Only way to make a work of art. Every moment makes a contribution. Every little detail plays a part. Having just a vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. Putting it together, that's what counts.
Always, by always.
Putting it together. Adding up to make a work of art. First of all, you need a good foundation. Otherwise, it's risky from the start. Takes an engineering calculation. And without a cost evaluation. Having just a vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. The art of making art is putting it together, bit by bit. Make the connection. Checking all the leads along the way. Learning how to hook up all the keys. Running all the cables without creases. Otherwise a 60 cycle hum can overwrite the ammo, bass and drum. Art isn't easy. Every minor detail is a major decision. Have to keep things in scale. Have to hold to your vision. A little cocktail conversation. It gives you things from your foundation. Every time I get a bit expensive, I remember research is expensive.
Not by not.
Building up the image.
Not by not.
Keeping at a distance doesn't pay. Still, if you remember your objective, nothing in your path then rights away. A little bit of hype can be effective as long as you can keep it in perspective. Even if you get some recognition, everything you do is still audition. Art isn't easy. All the night you're a trend, you're the right combination, then your trend's out in it. So suddenly last year's sensation. All they ever know is repetition. All they really like is what they know. Gotta keep a link to your tradition. Gotta learn to trust your intuition when you reestablish your position so that you can be on exhibition. So that your work can be on exhibition.
Be new guys. They'll tell us till they're blue guys. We're new or else we're through guys. And even if it's true, we do what we can do.
Bit by bit,
putting it together.
working out the vision night and day. All it takes is time and perseverance, with a little luck along the way. Putting in a personal appearance, gathering supporters and adherents. Mapping out the song, but in addition, harmonizing each negotiation, balancing the part that's all musician, with a part of strictly presentation, balancing the money with the mission, till you have a perfect orchestration, even if you do have the suspicion that it's taking all your concentration. The art of making art is putting it together. The state of the art.
To get ready for the big trio performance, we have to recruit another tenor. What better piece to try him out on than the famous Neapolitan song, O Sole Mio, My Sunshine. Pavarotti, the robotic tenor, leads out on verse 1. Then the human tenors join in.
That was beautiful, the trill and all.
Can I try that?
Oh,
Concert attire, the three tenors sing the famous aria Nessun Dorma from Puccini's opera Turandot. Who will attempt the treacherous high note at the end?
Nessun Dorma, Nessun Dorma. Principessa, nella tua fredda stanza, guardi le stelle che tremano d'amore e di speranza. Whoa!
Where does this take us in the future? I hope that simulated speech and song will never replace human soundings. I've tried to make the case today that vocalizing, like general body exercise, is a necessary part of life. It is the best emotional and spiritual outlet that we have. But with a voice simulator, we can explore, with little risk and cost to human health, the dimensions of many of our voices. We can explore these dimensions one at a time, slowly and carefully. Even if we take sizes and forces beyond their extremes, we cannot break anything. Furthermore, we can predict some effects of training, surgery, injury, and aging in a matter of minutes. Instantly, we can project the voice into the future and perhaps recover its past. I have taught my simulator how to sing, but it has also taught me how to sing. The real world and the virtual world will coexist side by side for the betterment of all of us. That is my dream. Thank you.